Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
Estás escuchando The Fifth Floor.
The Fifth Floor'ı dinliyorsunuz. Bizimle kalın.
Tumhi ekta The Fifth Floor farnak amidi sobat.
This is The Fifth Floor, at the heart of global storytelling with BBC journalists from all around the world. I'm your host, Farnak Amidi. In the first week of December 2024, Syrians woke up to a new reality.
A momentous day in the Middle East. The family dynasty that controlled Syria for more than half a century is no longer in power, with President Bashar al-Assad having fled the country as rebel forces closed in on the capital, Damascus.
This is where people are celebrating, in the central Umayyad Square. Civilians and rebels, you can hear the sound of celebratory gunfire. People are driving around in their cars. They're giving me peace signs. They're saying that life is going to be so much better now that Bashar al-Assad is gone. But there is a mix of joy.
It's an indescribable feeling. We're so happy. After all the years of dictatorship, we're at the moment that we're going to build the greatest Syria.
What's happened since? Salma Khattab from BBC Arabic has just been to Syria and can give us the latest. Hi, Salma. Welcome to The Fifth Floor.
Hi, Farnak. Happy to be with you today.
So right now there is a new government in Damascus. It's led by Ahmed al-Shara. He was formerly known as Abu Muhammad al-Jolani. Tell us, who is Ahmed al-Shara?
Ahmed al-Shara is a leader of HTS, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham. It's an Islamic armed group. It used to be al-Nusra Front. It was affiliated with Islamic State till 2013. He has a very close ties with Turkey. He took power in Idlib and ran a government there. And Idlib was like a self-ruled city by the Islamists. In December 2024, he appeared with a very different persona. He wanted to be seen as the young leader of Syria, the new leader, the new government, which will bring democracy, which will bring a new Syria to a new era. So he's now doing an effort to gain support from the West, from the US, from too many other countries. And he already has some of that strong support. The Emir of Qatar have visited Sharjah in Syria, and Sharjah himself have done many visits to other countries like Saudi and Turkey.
So for years, foreign journalists weren't allowed inside Syria, but you recently actually went to Syria to see what is going on the ground. What's going on in the country right now?
In the beginning, everyone was so happy and celebrating that al-Assad fall. Almost everyone we talked to, they told us they would never imagine that al-Assad family could fall in that way. But people started to question the future. They started to think, what the next ruler are going to do with us? There are still some fights in some areas, like especially in the northeast area where Kurdish forces are taking control of these parts. The new administration still doesn't have control over these parts of the country. They are trying to reach an agreement. Sharjah and the new administration wants to gather all the army groups into a new army. There have been some unrest recently. In Manbij city, it's a small town located in northeast Syria. It's now considered one of the front lines between SDF, the Kurdish force, and SNA, the National Syrian Army, which affiliated to the new administration and was affiliated to the Syrian opposition. In the past 2 months, this city has witnessed 7 car bombs. No one claimed responsibilities of these attacks. No one knows who did it.
So all of this, it's the political and the military kind of situation in the country, but it obviously has some ramifications on everyday life of people in Syria. You went to Damascus. I personally have been to Damascus myself. I went to Damascus in the early 2000s, and I remember it was a very lively city. There was music everywhere, and it had a pretty impressive nightlife from what I remember. But how is life for people at the moment on the ground in Damascus, for example, when you walk down the street? What is going on?
They still have an impressive nightlife. Mm-hmm. They still have restaurants, but it closes early. They don't have enough stuff. Mm. You can say that people are starting to getting back their life. We went to supermarkets, we went to local markets, there is food, but the currency is very volatile. The exchange rate against the US dollar changed 2 or 3 times a day. Mm. Everything is a bit expensive, even for the, especially for those who earn in local currency. An average meal, it can cost you like $20, $25. Wow. This might be unaffordable for people who earn in local currency. They don't get paid in US dollar. One more note I got from the markets. It's full of smuggled goodies. It's full of smuggled food into the country, imported goodies that were not allowed into the country before. Mm-hmm. I was in a supermarket and I heard 2 children talk about chocolate. One wants to get a Turkish chocolate and one wants to get a German chocolate. And when I asked them, have you seen these chocolates before in the supermarkets? They told me no.
Mm. And what about the suburbs and rural areas? Did you get a chance to travel and see what life is like there?
Yes, we got a chance to travel to some areas, outskirts areas of Damascus, especially an area called Jobar, and this area is completely destroyed. There we met a family of a man and his 5 children and wife. They are literally living between the rubble. And they are rebuilding their home while they are living in it because they can't afford to live elsewhere. The rents are very high, especially for Syrians. So the only option they have is to go back to their damaged home, their destroyed home, and live between the rubble.
Mm.
They didn't have any electricity, they don't have any heating, and it's so cold in Damascus, especially in the night.
Yeah, people forget that this is a country that has been struggling with civil war for 14 years. The destruction is unimaginable.
It's a widely destructed area. I mean, this man, he used to live in Afrin city. And after the fall of Assad, he took his family and got back to Damascus because he told me that he couldn't live in a refugee camp for all of his life. He wanted to get back home.
You're listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm Farhanak Hamidi, and in this episode of The Fifth Floor, I'm with BBC Arabic journalist Salma Khattab, who's just been to Syria to find out how the country's changed since the fall of Bashar al-Assad. And Salma, what about women? You know, with an Islamist coalition in power, a lot of people around the world were voicing their concerns about the women's situation in Syria and what the future might look like for women in Syria. Did you get to talk to women and see what they thought about the future?
I met a teacher in a restaurant. She told me that she's not very optimistic about the future, and she already started to hear comments from her colleague and from people in the street. Why don't you cover your hair? Why don't you wear more conservative clothes? Although the new administration make so many assurances that there will be a space for women in the new government, but many Syrian women are still feared that they will have no voice. Mm. I have talked to many women that all they wanted to do is to be reunited again with their families. I mean, I met a woman who told me that she hasn't seen her brothers since 14 years.
أخبي تركيا وأخبي ألمانيا.
بقالهم كم سنة؟ بقالي كم سنة ما شفتيهمش؟
13 سنة تقريبا من أول الحرب يعني. لا هلا الحمد لله يعني صار في فرصة أنه نلتقوا هيك.
They are now able to come back to the country and she is able to see them again. Another woman told me that all she cares about is security and safety, and she can walk in the street and be able to do whatever she wants without the fear of being arrested, without the fear of being followed or without the fear of anything. She wants to do whatever she wants in the street. She wants to feel free in her country. But the instabilities in some areas, like Manbij, the city in the northeast Syria, is reflected in a very bad way for women. I mean, one of the car bombs in Manbij, it's target a car that were carrying 20 women work in agriculture. I met two of the survivors of these attacks. The police told me that they are so afraid to go to work again because this explosion scared them a lot. So even though they need to work, they are not going to work anywhere again.
Yeah, especially if you're the only breadwinner, and so many men have died in the civil war as well.
Yes. One of the ladies, her husband is disabled. He can't go to work. So she used to work in that field in agriculture and earn bread for her three kids, her three girls. We met her in a refugee camp. And she told me now that she's so scared to go out of her tent. And she doesn't know how she's going to afford her family, how she's going to feed her three young girls.
Mm. And did you get to speak to government officials, authorities, to talk about what people's concerns are?
Yes, we managed to speak to some officials, especially in local areas. But the thing is, most of the officials are new to their positions, working in public government jobs. We're forbidden for anyone who has a family member related to the opposition during al-Assad regime. So I got the feeling that they don't know how to make it work yet. They are trying to figure out their way.
Salma Khattab from BBC Arabic. I'm Farhanak Hamidi. The Fifth Floor team this week was
Alicia Joya,
Caroline Ferguson,
and
Hannah Dean.
Thanks for listening. You've been listening to The Documentary from the BBC World Service.